This upcoming concert season will be all about the boots, and Tecovas is your stop for the best in Western style. Tecovas has seasonal and limited edition offerings this spring and summer, including men's and women's boots, apparel, hats, bags, and more. All Tecovas boots are made by hand in a time-honored tradition with timeless styles that are always on trend. And Tecovas has first wear comfort with little to no break-in period. It's hard to find this level of comfort paired with this level of style. Stop by your local Tecovas store, have a complimentary drink or two, that's WCB style, and shop new styles. The smell of fresh leather and friendly staff are at your service. Many stores even have leather custom branding to make your boots truly personalized. And with regular live music and events, there's no in-store experience like it. If you can't make it into a store, just visit tecovas.com. That's T-E-C-O-V-A-S.com. They offer free shipping on all boots, as well as free returns and exchanges, and ship right to your door. Go to tecovas.com and find your new favorite pair of boots today.
Fishing like a local isn't just about catching fish. It's about connecting with the environment and the people who call it home. It's about hearing the stories and traditions that have been passed down for generations and sharing unforgettable moments with the people you meet along the way. Fishing like a local is having an experience that stays with you forever. And with Fishing Booker, you can experience it too, no matter where you are. Discover your next adventure on Fishing Booker.
So there's a reason why I started Blood Origins. And that reason is simple. Is that I wanted to convey the truth about hunting.
It brings awareness to non-hunters that it's more than just killing animals.
How do I start it? Brittany.
My name is...
Does my hair look okay?
It's fantastic.
My name is Mike Axelrod.
Start again.
Yeah, I hated it too.
Braxton, you said something in the car to me. You said that you were living on borrowed time.
There's a perception around who hunters are, what we're supposed to be, and a feminist that works for a non-profit that is a hunter that has only eaten wild game for the last 20 years is likely not the thing that people think about when it comes to a hunter.
So I think I've only done one of these roundups by myself. Last time I did it, I was at home in Memphis, Tennessee. Well, currently I am definitely not at home. I am ready to be home. Feels like I've been on the road for, 16 days. 16 days for this trip. And, it's all romantic and whatnot until you spend that much time away from your family and kids and wife and dogs and all that kind of stuff. And, I'm ready to get home. So tomorrow, I'm currently in the Holiday Inn Express, San Sebastian, which is north of Madrid, Spain. Fly home, Madrid, Atlanta, Memphis tomorrow. All day flying, essentially. So flying west, catching up on time. So I'm probably not going to sleep at all on the plane to make sure that when I get home at 6:30, I'm pretty tired and be able to get a good night's sleep and forget jet lag for a little bit. Just stay at home. I got about probably 10 days at home and then got to head to Vancouver Island as the guest of Jim Shockey and his podcast, the Shock Therapy. So they're going to be there, and that's literally a freaking turn and burn. Fly out there one day, video podcast the next day, and then fly home the day after that, which is fine. It's going to be really good. Good to see Jim again. Good to be on his podcast, but we've been traveling like crazy already, as everyone knows if you follow us on social media. And things are happening. There's lots and lots and lots of things happening in the world. And I think that's sort of what I'll try and cover in the next, 10 minutes or 15 minutes. We'll keep this roundup short. You don't want to listen to my voice for too long. But we've been in Spain. We've been in Spain for the last 7 days, essentially. The Slots Media boys and Patrick Tillard, who's a guy that we hire to do behind-the-scenes camera work, they flew out this past Friday. I spent the weekend up north in Spain talking to one of our favorite partners, Bergara. and in terms of sort of figuring out the funding of certain projects moving forward. We're just a massive, massive fan of Bergara, massive fan of Rafa, Guillermo, Esther, that's the team here in Bergara, Spain. Obviously, the BPI team in Georgia, we're also big fans of Scott and Trisha and Dakota, the brand manager. Just big fans of them. They put their money where their mouth is, essentially. And a lot of people advocate conservation. They want to put money into conservation. But man, you know, last year they funded $75,000 into New Zealand, $45,000 into Zimbabwe. They're big. I might as well do a big announcement now. They have decided to come on board at the highest conservation club level. It's the heritage tier. It's just incredible. It's incredible to see Bergara just saying, man, we believe in what you do. We want you to keep doing it. We want you to go to the horizon. And as a company and in our industry, we love what you do. And so we're going to step up and we're going to help you. And their help is incredible. The generosity is unbelievable. So yeah, can't be more grateful to Bergara and the teams. Rafa and I chatted whilst we were in Spain and sort of talked through projects and ideas that we have this year and next year and into 2026. So super excited about what's coming then. But what the reason why we have been in Spain is that we came here to finish the documentary. If you've watched our stuff over the last 18 months or so, 18 months ago, we arrived in Spain for the first time. And we wanted to tell a story of a place called Carboneros. Carboneros is a national park here in Spain. It is a unique national park. There's only two of them that essentially drew a line that encompassed private land within the umbrella of the national park. And it's probably one of the most unique situations that's happening in Spain and probably in the world. I don't think of any national parks that I can think of in America or Australia or anything like that, that actually has private land under the auspices of the national park. And so government obviously decided that there should be no hunting in the national park, which makes sense. Doesn't happen in Australia. Doesn't happen in New Zealand. Doesn't happen in America. And so, you know, it's not unique that there is going to be no hunting in a national park, but the scenario that there's private land that's still owned by private people who use hunting as a management tool, number one, of our populations, but secondly, are commercializing hunting. So people pay to come hunt, which is in fact a form of wildlife management. It's the same thing as essentially culling, just making a little bit of money to employ the game guard, anti-poaching, to ensure that the fire lanes are in place, to ensure and to pay for, you know, the muleros, which are the guys that come in with the horses, the dogs. There's just a lot of expenses. And so you need to sell a couple of the hunts and to be able to do that. And so we found out about the story and we're like, wow, this is super unique. And that here's an opportunity to illustrate what a ban of hunting would do in a place like Carboneros. Could have been South Africa, could have been America, could have been anywhere, but just happened to be here in Spain. And so when we came in 18 months ago, we did a very comprehensive filming piece when we were there. And what we put together, we debuted in Madrid last March, and it was really focused on the people and the economies and showing that, man, you've got hotels closing, you've got gas stations closing, you've got people losing their jobs. You got non-hunters that work in the leather business, that work in the mule business, that work in the dog business, that work in the catering businesses, all affected by this ban of hunting. So certainly this ripple through the community of economic hardships. Certainly people, you know, don't have jobs, leaving areas, which then affect schools that don't have kids, that they can't afford teachers. As you can see, a knock-on effect, constant knock-on effect. And so what we heard, though, all through 2023 was that there potentially was some conversations happening between the private landowners and the government, the regional government, about potentially letting them cull again. and or hunt again. But there was a lot of things that were in the way. And those things specifically is the cost of paying someone to cull. So the National Park put together a plan, which was adopted in July of 2023, which is a population control plan. And so the government is saying, yes, you must cull. Yes, you can hunt. Well, this is a national park, and so it's the government's job to do those two things. Well, they can't do it on private land. And so the private landowners are saying, well, government, you're telling us that we need to cull, or we can cull, and we can hunt, but you're telling us we can't sell any of the hunts. So you're going to pay us, right, to cull and hunt, because we can't sell it. And that's the sticking point, is that there's no money yet from the government to pay for hunting, or pay for quote-unquote culling. And essentially, I could, you know, use culling and hunting interchangeably in this scenario, because hunting and culling in the Spanish sense, the Montería sense, this big driven hunt that happens only four or five times a year, is essentially a population control measure. That's really what it's all about. And so that's what it's come down to. And so all of last year, we were waiting and waiting and waiting because we felt like if they got the permission to cull, we wanted to come back for that because it's going to be a very, very visceral thing. It's going to be very in your face because, just to give you an idea, the population control plan suggests that deer should be maintained at 25 deer per square kilometer here in Spain or in Cabanas. According to the estimates of the consultants, the deer numbers currently are 70 deer per square kilometer. So that's three times the amount of deer. And that's not to mention the pigs. Based on what we saw this time around, I could argue that there's probably 70 pigs per square kilometer too. The pigs are out of control. There's so many pigs. And so we wanted to get a really good handle this time around because obviously they cannot cull, they cannot hunt. So this biomass is just accumulating. You can imagine what the vegetation looks like, what the ecosystem looks like. And honestly, when we were driving around this time, I remembered areas that we had droned in 18 months ago. And I remember driving past areas. And my constant comment throughout the entire trip this time was, wow, I can't remember it being this open. I remember the brush being waist high, chest high. But the brush was like knee high now or ankle high. There were certainly a lot more open areas. And what the forester was telling me is that in these meadows near the streams and where they've got meadows, the bush is essentially being pushed back like 100 to 150 meters because of overgrazing, overbrowsing of red deer. Unbelievably, the best part of this trip was when we went to the border. We went to the boundary of the national park. And the boundary of the national park is obviously the boundary of this estate. And then there's an estate right next door to it. And the estate right next door to it is hunted. It's hunted normally. And the visual comparison between, like literally there was a gate there, so we could walk from one side to the other. The visual comparison of walking from the side that was quote unquote in a national park and the banning of hunting has been put on it, to walking across the fence through the gate to a place that is hunted and is not a national park. It was unbelievable. It was just the difference in vegetation structure, the difference in flowering, the difference in certain species, like big, nice couple of legumes. You know, legumes are beans. They're full of protein. It's like probably the number one thing that a deer will attack or browse because of the protein content on it. There's certain legumes that do not exist in the national park on the private land any longer. Because they've just been overgrazed. They've been taken out. And they just don't have an opportunity to regenerate. And again, that's another thing you'll see. There's no regeneration of the oak canopy. There's no regeneration of the ash along the riparian zones. There's no forest regeneration happening on the private land side of things. You go on outside the national park. And again, think about it. What's a national park supposed to be about? It's supposed to be about biodiversity. It's supposed to be about biodiversity conservation. It's about sustainable healthy ecosystems. Everything you think about a national park, that's what this should be. But it is exactly the opposite. Literally, you step outside the national park and the system looks incredibly healthy. It looks incredibly vibrant. The flowers, the structure, like you're walking through ankle height, shin high grass. And on the other side, the grass is literally mown down. It's like a mower has gone through every place. And it's exactly the same everywhere. There's not just places that have like more grass somewhere. It is like that everywhere. Mown down, bare soil everywhere. And you can imagine that obviously with big rains, it's in the spring right now, the rain, it's coming to the end of the rainy season. They've got a little bit more rain to come. But you're going to get probably a little bit more erosion happening in these systems that are heavily grazed and heavily overly browsed. It was just fascinating. And so at the end of the documentary, we all came together. We interviewed a number of scientists, a number of professors that are not, you know, in the hunting space. And the last guy that we interviewed in Madrid was just super passionate, and I could hear him say, like, I don't speak a lot of Spanish, I speak a little bit of Spanish, but I could hear him say something along the lines of, "It doesn't matter if you believe in hunting, or it doesn't matter if you don't believe in hunting. You should believe in the system itself, and you should believe in creating a system that is super healthy. And if at the end of the day that means you have to hunt to maintain a healthy system, then that's what we all should be about." It was an absolutely powerful statement. So yeah, the Caballeros piece has been unbelievable. We're now finally finished it. And so essentially now what we're going to do is we're going to just create a brand new documentary inclusive of all the elements. So the first one was just about people and economies. This one's going to have everything pulled together. And it's really, you know, at the crux of it is the idea of, you know, what is the consequence of banning hunting? That's it. And so that's what we plan to do. And that's something we plan to be finished hopefully in the September to December timeframe, and then come back to Madrid and do a big debut over here for everyone. So it'll be exciting. What's coming up? I've been a little quiet on a very, very controversial topic right now. And we've been purposely quiet on it because we are gathering a lot of information behind the scenes. You may not be familiar with it. This audience is probably not familiar with it, but there's been a huge controversy in the elephant hunting space, specifically on the border between Tanzania and Kenya. And what's happening there is that there has been three elephants hunted that the media storm around them is calling these guys super tuskers, i.e. tuskers of 100 pounds or more. Or mega tuskers now, I think it's going to be the next terminology used. But just big tuskers, 100 pounders. And in anywhere else in Africa, I don't think anybody would be talking this much about it. But because the system borders Kenya, and then within, you know, 50 to 60 kilometers is Amboseli National Park, which has famous big tusked elephants. The photographic sector, as well as the non-profit sector in that area, are up in arms to say that you should not be hunting these elephants. And that poses a lot of different questions. And obviously the big questions that have been posed, there's been a lot of controversy around, a lot of misinformation around it, in that, you know, were the carcasses burnt? That was one of the reports. Was a helicopter used to push the elephants into an area? That was another thing that was brought up, that these elephants are habituated, that you can just walk up to them. They're used to humans. And so, again, we haven't said anything. We haven't posted about it. We did one podcast with two photographic guys, non-hunters, to just clear to talk about some pieces, just like we like to do. But we've been slowly but surely gathering information behind the scenes. And I think what's been missing in this whole endeavor has been some basic questions around hunting, specifically in this area. So Kenya, just to give you some context, Kenya stopped hunting in 1977. So 50 years of non-hunting, no consumptive use happening in Kenya. Tanzania banned hunting from 1973 to 1978, and after that has resumed hunting and has been hunting for 50 years. Tanzania has protected, has under its protection, 43.9% of its land is protected, conserved, whether through hunting or ecotourism or national parks. Kenya has 8% of land conserved.
The 1911 is one of the most iconic firearms in history. Designed by John Browning, the 1911 was the standard-issue sidearm of the U.S. military from 1911 to 1985. While Colt produced the original, almost every major firearm company has produced its own version. It's wildly revered for its reliability, crisp trigger, and is still a favorite for all types of shooters. Whether you're looking to buy or build a 1911 and just about everything for guns, log on to MidwayUSA.com. Whether you're just looking to stay warm during a hunt or need maximum concealment, the clothing you wear can make or break a hunt. At MidwayUSA.com, we understand hunting clothing has come a long way with more meticulously crafted camo patterns, advanced scent control technologies, and weatherproof options to withstand the elements. Hunters have to wait until their favorite season, but shouldn't wait on gear, which is why MidwayUSA offers super fast shipping. When you're ready for your next system, log on to MidwayUSA.com.
So, when you talk about these elephants, all the finger pointing has been from Kenya to Tanzania. These elephants are coming into Tanzania, you should protect our elephants. What about elephants that are in Tanzania that move into these areas from Tanzania? The call to ban hunting of elephants in this area suggests that all these elephants in this area come from Kenya. I don't think anyone has asked the question, do any of these elephants come from Tanzania? Another question is, there's obviously a lot of poaching and human wildlife conflict that happens in Kenya because of a lack of conservation areas in Kenya, specifically around Amboseli. There's a lot of agriculture, a lot of elephants. What are the Kenyans doing to protect elephants coming from the Tanzanian side over to Kenya? I think that I've seen a number of elephants show up. I've seen a lot of social media posts and been doing a little bit of behind-the-scenes investigations where people say, wow, this bull just showed up. We don't know who this bull is. And this is the most historically studied elephant population on the African continent, is Amboseli. It's been done for 50 years. They've followed the genealogy of many, 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 many elephants from birth to death. Yet they have elephants that constantly show up that are big tusks, that didn't originate from the Amboseli system. So where'd they come from? More than likely, they came out of Tanzania. How did they get to that size in Tanzania? Because of the amount of land that was protected. And protected specifically because through a consumptive use model that values old, mature animals, from elephants to lions to buffalo to all sorts of plains game animals. And so there's going to be a little bit more chatter from our perspective coming in the next 10 days. We have secured, should happen this week, should have happened last week, actually. Not last week, because I've been in Spain. Sorry, losing my mind. Should happen this coming week, in which we have spoken to the PH, Zidane, who was involved in two of the elephants being hunted. And I want to hear from him. And I want to ask him the hard questions. I want to ask him, you know, everyone's saying that this is an unethical hunt because of X, Y, Z. Is that true? Why did you burn the carcass? What's the reasoning there? Why didn't you release the photos? I think I know the answer to why you didn't release the photos already, because it would have been a bigger shitstorm than it is right now. But there could have been opportunities to potentially show people in the know enough to say, look, this isn't one of your elephants. There's another question. Are we absolutely sure that the three elephants that got killed in Tanzania, are Kenyan bulls? Maybe they're just Tanzanian bulls. Maybe they're bulls that nobody's ever heard about. And that's the other thing. What if nobody's ever seen one of these elephants? What if these bulls... Here's another big question for you to think about. So the problem comes when an iconic elephant is killed. Iconic, in my mind, is a bull that is very well known. And those well-known bulls are attractions. People will come to a certain area to see that bull, to photograph that bull, to be close to that bull. There's a value there. Just like hunting, there's a value there. But just like we reported on in Botswana last year, NG13, the whole rigmarole with that elephant was that it was an iconic elephant. Well, actually, it wasn't. Because nobody could produce a picture of said elephant that had been killed. Nobody knew about this elephant. This elephant had roamed and roamed and roamed and had probably spent time in Angola, had spent time in Botswana, had spent time in who knows. Yet nobody knew it. Nobody was familiar with it. It wasn't this elephant that was like, ah, oh, this is, and again, anthropomorphized. Most of the big iconic elephants have names. This wasn't Alex, whatever it was. And so the same thing with these three Tanzanian bulls. You know, who are they? What are they? You know, are they, were they iconic bulls? Again, we haven't seen any of the pictures. They haven't been released. And again, I understand why they have not been released. Because again, shitstorms around social media tied to elephants like that or big iconic things. That's the reason why things get a lot of legs, is because there's visuals to go with it. So I get it. I get it. But if none of these elephants were iconic and nobody actually knew about these elephants and they were of age, which typically a long, big, tusked elephant is of age, then we shouldn't have a problem with it. Again, another big question. Again, I'm going through sort of my brain process with you guys right now. But another big question is that elephants in this area age a little differently in terms of on the hoof, on the foot. You know, elephants in Botswana and whatnot, a 45-plus-year-old elephant is pretty discernible. Whilst in these ecosystems, a 45-plus-year-old elephant may actually not be 45. It may be 40. And so the question is, like, are we taking the appropriate elephants? And again, from a hunting perspective, and this is one of the things I'd like to ask Zidane, is from a hunting perspective, if you knew the elephant that you're about to take, even though it has monstrous tusks, was 40, what do you think that elephant would be like at 48? Put another 8 years of tusk growth on it. Man. That's going to be a super tusker. Like, it's called a super tusker right now, but Lewis was joking and saying, you guys are going to get into like the giga tusker. No, it's going to be just a monster. It's going to be a monster. And so maybe there's a, you know, I don't know, is there something that we need to look at from an aging perspective of these elephants? But wow, I don't know. So anyway, there's a lot of controversy coming with that. Obviously, we're still intact with, in sort of lockstep with Colorado. Interestingly enough, the Colorado mountain lion ban joined forces with an Instagram account called Elephant Journal. And when you look at Elephant Journal, it's like 677,000 followers. You're like, holy smokes, that's a huge freaking Instagram. That's now all for this ban. But the engagement on the account is absolutely abysmal. Had like 67 likes on a post. And I think it had like 100 comments, and probably 99 of the comments were pro-hunting comments, which elevated the post in the algorithm. So maybe we shouldn't be commenting on a post like that because they're just absolutely not getting any traction at all. So yeah, we're staying well on top of that. And just to let everyone know, whoever's listening to this, mark it on your calendars, August the 29th. August the 29th, Thursday, August the 29th in Denver, Colorado at the Paramount Theater. We will be releasing, debuting, premiering Black Tie Event, Lionheart for the Coloradan audience. And the timing of the debut is very, very purposeful. At that stage, July 3rd is the final day for signature gatherers. And if they have enough signatures, they'll obviously validate it over the next two-month timeline. So all the way through July, all the way through August. And so August the 29th, we will know whether or not we are in the fighter fights, whether or not that question got put on the ballot, gathered enough signatures to get put on the ballot, or we won. And here we are celebrating Lionheart for the reason, because they did not gather enough signatures. And I think I'm very, very, very confident that that's the position we're going to be in, which will make it an amazing night. So make sure you mark your calendars, please. And then just do me a favor. Our podcast is growing slowly but surely. We're just like a little turtle that just constantly wakes up every morning, and we slowly make our way up the hill, just like everything we do. But to help us do that, we need you guys to help. We need you to share the content. We need you to share the podcasts. We need you to really give us a couple of reviews, give us a couple of ratings. If you're listening to this on Spotify, if you're listening to this on Apple, give us a rating on both. Give us a review on both. I don't think you can put a review on Spotify, but if you can, go ahead and do it, please. Just really grateful for you guys. Hopefully we get a little bit more consistent from the roundup. I promise I will do that. And then I will give you an update on Cody. I know everyone's looking at the roundup and going, oh, what happened to Cody? And we will get Cody back on a roundup to explain himself and to explain what the next steps are for Cody. It's really exciting for him, and reason for his absence. So let us know if we can do anything for you. Email us at info@bloodorigins.com. Very last thing, probably we'll be on the street by the time this roundup hits the airwaves, is that Blood Origins is hiring for the very, very first time. I can't believe it. I'm super excited about it. And it's just, I can't believe we're growing that fast. And we need help. I need help to stay on top of things. And so we are hiring a director of global policy engagement. The director of global policy engagement is going to help me do everything that I do, is going to assume this mission of Blood Origins. I want them to embody it. I want them to sacrifice like I sacrifice all the time, because this is a baby grassroots organization that has the potential, just to go to the moon. And, we've been going for 3 years now as a nonprofit, and I couldn't believe how far we've come in 3 years. And we get the right person in the right seat doing the right job with the right passion. Man, we're going to be all over it. If you know anybody who's in the policy game internationally and is well-spoken, is articulate, has an environmental conservation background to them, so they can speak from an education perspective around conservation, around environment, around policy, is interested in research, is interested in analyzing things, is interested in putting content out there, let them know. You can send an email to jobs@bloodorigins.com. Send an email, jobs@bloodorigins.com. You can find the position description on our Instagram, on our Linktree. You can find it on on LinkedIn. And if you want, just email me, robbie@bloodorigins.com, and I will send you an application. So yeah. All right, that's it. I talked for way too much, 30 minutes, and signing off from Madrid, Spain. Next time I do a roundup, I'll be in Memphis, Tennessee. And I really, really appreciate all of you, man. You guys are the best. Reach out if you need anything. DM us on Instagram, Facebook, message us. We're not hard to find. So, cheers. Bye.
Well, that's it for today. Appreciate you listening, as always. Leave a review, share it with your friends, and most importantly, do what's right to convey the truth around hunting.
On Mondays, head offshore with Captain Scott Walker and Steve Roger for breathtaking deep sea adventures.
Coming to me.
Double. He's jumping.
Oh!
Look at that belly.
Don't miss Mondays with Into the Blue, brought to you by Academy Sports and Outdoors from 7 to 10 p.m. Eastern.
Tell a few fish stories along the way.
On Waypoint TV, the destination for outdoor entertainment. In Wild Country, rules were not created by man. Don't miss Wild Country, Wednesdays from 7 to 11 p.m. Eastern. Presented by Primos. Speak the language. Waypoint TV, the destination for outdoor entertainment.